And I actually don't know how black I should be right now. I don't know how black I should be to this Christian environment. And I don't know how Christian I should be to the black plight that we're experiencing. How, like, you have any thoughts on that? Welcome to I Question God, the podcast. My name is Lamaya Larez. I'm your host. Today we're going to be talking about the complexities of being a black Christian, especially right now in today's climate. And, you know, the church is super divided. You know, somebody read me a quote and it said, "The most segregated day in America is on Sundays." And it's wild to still think about that we actually have whole denominations today that were formed behind separating of the races. It's a chilling thought, and honestly, this topic could honestly be its own show. You know, like, we can do a whole 5 seasons long of Christianity and race in America, but today is just the beginning. And I'm super excited for my amazing guest, this woman. Okay, I'll introduce her and then she'll introduce herself. But she's a real friend. I've had so many, like, just encounters with Jesus in her presence. Like, honestly, she, I would say, one of the closest people to Jesus that I've ever met. I'm, like, not even joking. She's a intercessor. She's a mother. She's a lover of the Lord. My really good friend, Danielle. Hi, Danielle.
Hi. That was really nice. I was like, oh, is that me?
Come on.
My name is Danielle. I am a mother of a little 9-year-old. He's great. I just love people. I love Jesus. Yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
Come on. Is there anything else you would want us to know about you?
I would probably want you to know that... I don't know. I don't know.
Okay, that's good. Hey, she's a woman of mystery, so we'll just... Oh, just embrace it.
Don't know what you're gonna get.
Before we jump right into the topic, I always love to ask my guests one question.
Okay.
What is your favorite memory, experience, or encounter with Jesus?
So many to choose from. I just always think back to where I first met Jesus, because it was such an interesting time of my life. I was really steeped in addiction, and the fact that I was, like, really at my lowest of lows, and yet when I look back on it, he was actually wooing me for a few months down the line, and I just didn't have context for what was going on. I would say that that is one of my favorite pastimes, so to speak, with Jesus in the way that he did it. And when I finally found myself, you know, in this church and his love, the pastor was talking about being a friend of God, and it clicked, like, oh, That's who this was all this time. Oh, he's trying to be my friend. Oh, you want to be my friend? Okay. Wow. That was the moment that changed everything for me. That was the moment, and it was, I mean, only about 4 years ago when that happened. But it was so powerful that I never went back to drugs. And isn't that just Jesus?
So Jesus.
So yeah, that's one of my favorites. That I always refer to, because it was the one that changed my life.
Wow.
Yeah, literal miracle. Literal.
Your salvation is a miracle.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. So it really is.
Come on.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think blackness is? How would you define it? What's your relationship to it? How was blackness presented to you just growing up?
I'll just start with what my experience was growing up black. We lived in predominantly white neighborhoods. I moved around quite a bit growing up. Because of my dad's job, and whenever he would take a promotion, which was very often, we would move to another state, and they were like very predominantly like white areas, small towns, you name it. And so I was always very aware that I was black. I was always very aware
what?
That I was different.
You weren't colorblind.
No, girl, I was not colorblind. I'd look at me. I'd look at them. I'd look at me.
Oh, man.
And so growing up then for me was I really didn't acknowledge the fact, like in my brain, in my little adolescent mind, that I was different until about the time when I hit, I would say, third, fourth grade. We lived in a little small town in Minnesota, and I was on the playground during recess, and this little boy comes like running across, and he's like, "Oh, what are you doing here, little girl?" And I'm like, "Huh? What did you say to me?"
Wow.
And I remember going home and, you know, talking to my parents about it and not really understanding like the weight of it. You know, my father had taught us about Black history. But there was just something different about like being confronted with that, like that. Not to mention, and not just that, I'll get back to that, but there are times at school people come by, "Oh, can I touch your hair?
Jeez.
Why is your skin that color and why is mine not?" As if they're exploring their own curiosity because they have no idea either. But when you're young, you just are looking at yourself like, "What's wrong with me?"
Yeah.
So I grew up in some ways almost being ashamed in a sense because I had no one else around me that looked like me. And they treated me like I was felt like a creature.
Wow.
So that after that day, I remember that it was a very small town. So there's a middle school, a high school, and an elementary. And I remember my dad taking it upon himself to teach the entire school about Black history.
Wow, you had that type of dad.
Yeah. Yeah, we were just like, okay. He recognized, okay, obviously they don't understand, and you know, you always deal with a level of ignorance when it comes to that topic. So to teach is to empower, to change is to teach and empower people with other information in order to do so. So that's where he went. So for me, growing up and thinking about Blackness was hard because not only was I looked at like you're different and I had to wrestle with that, but people also expected me to behave or act a certain way. And when I didn't fit that, then it became, well, but aren't you black? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was that whole thing. So my relationship to my blackness growing up wasn't great because of the experiences that I had. And at this time of my life, you know, I didn't grow up in the church or anything of that nature.
Right.
So it was just like people projecting what they wanted upon me and not really having any sort of foundation with myself.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder, like, so you were confronted with your reality of being black compared to the stereotypes of what black look like, yes. right? And I just wanted to point out some stereotypes that you just did not fit. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
One, you were in Minnesota. It's like, whoa, right? You weren't in Chicago. You were in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Your dad, mm-hmm. you had a dad growing up.
Yeah.
And he came in and he taught Black history.
Yeah.
Because to teach is to empower.
Yeah.
So there were just so many stereotypes that you just didn't click with. Like, your Black experience, nonetheless, still a Black experience, right. was so different than what we see on TV, mm-hmm. what we see in, you know, music videos, mm-hmm. stereotypes that, like, they like to... present to us on the news, mm-hmm. you know, and I think it's crazy that we're both sitting here, two young Black women yeah. who both had fathers in their lives,
yeah.
who both had educated parents.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, let's go. Like, it's so crazy. Like, so I feel like sometimes we're so comfortable with stereotypes that we never actually, like, examine.
Yeah.
Or fight up against that, like,
yeah.
actually, my Black experience looked a lot different, like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. Look quite a bit different.
Wow.
Yeah.
Comparing that, like, your Black experience before you entered church, what did it look like coming into the church, Black, and what type of, like, let's start this. What type of churches did you start going to when you first became a Christian?
So when I first became a Christian, I was living in Oregon. And so, better on the diversity side of things.
Okay.
I lived in a college town. So
let's go.
It was a little more diverse, but the churches specifically, still predominantly white.
Yeah.
So coming in, it was, you know, you're always aware that, okay, I'm a part of a small percentage of the diverse group. But I think I ran into more of the, we don't really see your color. We just see you like you're a person.
Yeah.
You're a person that is now just being restored, being brought in, and we want to help any way we can. So there was a lot of, yes, we see you as a person. I didn't necessarily experience I never experienced anything that would lead me to believe that I necessarily needed to be worried or concerned about the issue of race when I first came in. But there was not necessarily anything specifically happening at the time to
yeah.
trigger something that would show you what's really going on.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
That makes total sense. And I feel like even as a new Christian,
mm-hmm.
I think it's so important to establish your identity as just a Christian.
Absolutely.
As just a lover of Jesus, knowing who you are compared to him.
Yeah.
And so I'm not even concerned that that was your experience, because it just sounds like when you first entered into Christianity, you just had people there to love you.
Absolutely. I would say that the community in that city particularly was very unique in how they approached people. I mean, they didn't care where you came out of, if you were homeless, if you were a drug addicted, if you were a prostitute, Black, white, whatever you were, there was a, like, our arms are open to you.
Yeah.
I remember one of the pastors even saying, at one point, says, talking to his congregation, saying, you know, there's a lot of people that are going to be coming into the boat, you know, people that are live life a lot different than you, because the Lord's really moving on that. And if you can't really handle that, then get out of the boat.
Whoa.
And I thought, I like that.
Whoa. That is so cool.
Yeah, it was. And they lived that very, very well. They lived out love very, very, very well. And welcoming and acceptance very well.
Yeah. That like almost makes me want to like cry a little bit, because it's like, whoa. I think we need that. Like, I think we need more of that. How did that aid you as a new Christian? Like, what did that feel like?
Well, not only was I a new Christian, I was someone recovering from a drug addiction.
Whoa, yeah.
So, and not just like a 30-day addiction, but we're talking years of addiction.
Yeah.
So it was crucial for my growth in order to come in, not worry about where my needs, my clothes, my food was coming from. It just, to have people around that were going to tell me who I was in Christ. I was in a recovery program that was 18 months long in total. And it was a faith-based program at that.
Yeah.
And so I had nothing but time to get acquainted with God, to get acquainted with the Lord, to get acquainted with my Bible, to learn, and people who also love the Lord just as much, making sure I knew who I was, and that there was, by the time I left, that there was no question in me about whose I was.
Wow.
There was no question about where my identity lied. Now, you know, within saying that, you still go through, I think we all do, where we're like questioning like our importance, our significance as a person, who we are in God, or we might not believe it fully like we think we might. But I think that's still somewhere a part of the process of growing with God anyway. So.
So fire.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. Like, identity is everything. Mm-hmm. Identity is the foundation, because if you don't know, like I always say, like, identity is relational.
Yeah.
So if you're if I'm living in California, or if I'm born in California, I'm a Californian. Like, that is my part of my identity, because I have a relationship with California.
Yeah.
Now, when you enter into the church, it's just like, you need to know not just that you're a Christian, but that in your identity, you are like God. Like, yes. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
And not only that, I feel like you were, man, it's such a unique experience. And I'm super excited for your life, because just to have that testimony be able, it's like replicable now. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because you lived through a people who didn't look like you,
mm-hmm.
different backgrounds,
mm-hmm.
everything relational in your identities deferred, but then you come to a place, to the house of God,
yeah.
and it wasn't segregated. It was inclusive, and it was inviting.
Yes.
And that is the goal. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think we should have these conversations just to down what is, right? Just to complain about what is. But I feel like what you brought to this, I wasn't even really expecting that. I don't think. But what you brought to this is like an expectancy of what should be.
And could be.
And could be.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Should be, could be, will be.
Wow.
Very hopeful.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So let's talk about like the summer. Yo. We're like, it was a joke. And next.
Yeah, summer.
Yeah. And if you're listening to this in the future, we're talking about the 2020 in the pandemic. The 2020, like
the 2020,
like, let's just label this year as the year, and we all know the connotation of it.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm gonna make 2020 a whole adjective, like, wow, that's 2020 right there. Oh man, but let's talk about this summer. Like, so this summer we're in the pandemic,
yeah.
Everything that was going on in our lives, like, we're in ministry school. This is how I know Danielle. Everything stopped.
Mm-hmm. Period.
Like, it's gone. Mm-hmm. We're all isolated to our little corners of the world. Yeah. And then an election season is coming up upon us. And we're in a predominantly white, conservative, Republican environment as two black women, right? And then, boom, Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor and George Floyd. Yeah. I remember I had been seeing Ahmaud Arbery's picture just floating around the internet, mm-hmm. and I was just confused. I was like, I didn't engage because at that time I was doing something else, right? Yeah. So my mind was somewhere else. But when I finally found out, like, what had happened, I was like, mm-hmm. You know, like, I don't even mm-hmm. know if I have words to describe where I was. And then just a few weeks later, to find out about George Floyd, I remember waking up, I think it was a Tuesday for me, and I was like, man, I'm so tired. I think I watched the video, cried, yeah. rolled over, and just went back to sleep. Mm-hmm. I was like, done for. I was like, you know what? Not today. And a couple days later, I invited you and a couple other people into a group because I was like, I just feel like the Lord just wants us to lament in public.
Yeah.
And that was my heart behind, like, the group and the panel talk that we had. How did you take all of that, like, within this year?
When these things first happened, really just shook. Completely shook. Because to wrestle with the reality of it is 2020 and we have these things still taking place, it breaks my heart. It angers me, but I think above all, it actually breaks my heart.
Wow.
I feel like I want to cry even just talking about it. So then you're in an environment where, one can say that it's probably a hard reality for someone who doesn't look like us to grasp. And that's reality that can really very much still be the truth. So trying to balance my own feelings and emotions with being in a setting where there's a lack of understanding, and in some cases, a lack of empathy.
Yeah.
A lack of compassion, which shocked me. it was very hard. But in the midst of that, I realized that It's so wide open now. It's so it was so seen, and so you can't really shut your eyes to it unless you just really just don't care. Like it's hard for you to look away at now. You know, a lot of people are like, "Oh, you're 2020," you know, 2020 vision, and it was for me, yeah. 20. I mean, I wouldn't have thought, oh, when we hear 2020 vision, the things that we would see, and it would be as hard as it was. But the reality of it is we got a glimpse into what's still happening in our world.
So and true.
I don't think we ever get things revealed to us in order to keep us in a place of despair or in a reality that there can't ever be changed, but definitely takes work on all sides. So in the summer, it was really just like a reality check. It was hard to see pain and feel pain like that.
Wow. And yeah. And I think all of this was happening, and I think like my memory of this summer, I was hanging out like mostly with my friends from Uganda, mm-hmm. who only experienced in America, and then my friend from South Africa.
Yeah.
So these are two women of color who are in America, mm-hmm. and who felt that, like, man, I think one of my friends said, why do they hate us? Like it was like such a childlike question when she said it. And I was just like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Wow.
And then on the other side, I think I felt so torn being a Christian, mm-hmm. because now we have the election coming up on us, and the whole narrative in the evangelical church is like, if you vote Democrat, you just don't believe in Jesus. And then I had conversations with other black women in my life.
Yeah.
Strong Christians who are voting Democrat.
Yeah.
You know, very publicly about that.
Yeah.
And who are calling some people that I actually really eat from, you know, like some white pastors and whatever. And they're like, man, they're just lost. Wow. So now you have I felt so torn the whole summer. Like, I really didn't know how I didn't know how black I should be, and I didn't know how Christian I should be.
I get it.
Like, what does that mean to you? Like, how, like, that whole idea of, man, I actually don't know how black I should be right now. I don't know. And I don't know how black I should be to this Christian environment, mm-hmm. and I don't know how Christian I should be to the black plight that we're experiencing. How, like, do you have any thoughts on that? Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of I Question God. This was part one of a hour-long conversation on race and Christianity in America. I hope you really enjoyed it. I hope you found the conversation both insightful and hopeful. I know I did. I didn't think I would find so much hope coming out of this conversation, because it's in general such a heavy topic that could be quite daunting in some ways. But I think instead of searching the problem, what we found in this conversation was a hint of solution. And I thought that was beautiful. We left you guys on a cliffhanger. Danielle was just about to answer a really important question. So please be back for next week's episode. Please follow me on Instagram, at Lamai Larez. And make sure you follow the podcast on Instagram at I Question God Podcast. There you'll be linked with Danielle, myself, and other believers and non-believers that are learning more about this man named Jesus, going on this journey with us. We love you. Have a great day. See you next week for part two. Bye-bye.